Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Welcome to Manifestation Therapy Podcast. Today, my guest is Diana Firth, author of Love Doesn't Pay the Bills and A Guide to Living with Intention. Di's work is all about simplifying life and creating space for what truly matters. We'll dive into her story with early diagnosed ADHD, the lessons she's learned along the way, and how you can apply her wisdom, intuition, to manifest more ease, freedom, and alignment in your own life.
Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to the Manifestation Therapy Podcast. I'm Judy Holly, clinical social worker, trauma therapist, master manifestation coach, and creator of Manifestation Therapy. This podcast blends the wisdom of universal principles with the transformative neuroscience of manifestation, aligning conscious creation with evidence-based healing. Whether you're a practitioner or on your own path of growth, we'll find inspiration for an abundant, aligned life. In each episode, I share strategies, insights, and conversations with healers, mental health professionals, coaches, thought leaders, and individuals with powerful personal stories. Before we begin, a quick note. The views and opinions expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect my personal beliefs or the principles of manifestation therapy. This is a space for open conversation and exploration, so take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and always honor your own intuition. Hi, Di. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Judy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to do the podcast with you.
Likewise.
Usually I start by kind of just asking people their story. So what's your background in how you got here today?
Oh, good question. Okay, I'll try to summarize it quickly. I started my career out as a counselor. I got a degree in family studies and human development. And I absolutely loved it. I worked with inner city youth, both in Phoenix and in the DC metro area. And I just absolutely loved it. But then my life took a turn and I decided at the age of 30 that on a whim, I just wanted to move to New York City. I wanted just this excitement that New York brought. And, you know, this is something that I find very common right now. And it's something that I did myself. I started chasing money and I left a purposeful career where I was really giving back and helping in a deeper way to satisfy my own self, right? And a lot of it came from fear. I had a lot of debt for financial aid and school, and I wanted to go back and get the master's and continue on in social work, but I was just chasing the money and chasing the money and chasing the money. And over the stretch of the age of 30 to 39, I kept feeling this push-pull. I knew my heart was just yearning to give back in a deeper way and to do more. But yet I was filling my life with these jobs that were making me feel empty. And I was feeling more and more lost every day. And so I then, my life completely fell apart at the age of 39. I hit what I consider my rock bottom. And when that happened, it was like, you know, sometimes the universe will rip everything away from you, right? In order for you to see a clear path. And so where it wasn't perfectly clear, it was clear to me that I needed to do this one thing now because I was 39 years old. I still had an opportunity to like dig in and do something that had more meaning.
Wow.
And at least something that I loved, something that meant something for me where I felt like I was giving back. So my life was at rock bottom. I literally lost a job, a relationship that I thought was moving into marriage. I lost my home. I had nothing. So then I decided this is a great time. I've lost everything else. What do I have to lose? And so I started a business.
And you were in New York?
No, at this point I had moved back to DC.
Okay.
I had moved back to DC. And again, I was just, you know, scattered, chasing, looking, confused, not really. Sometimes I was listening to my internal compass and then I was listening to what everyone thought I should do.
Right.
So getting back to just the rock bottom place, it was the craziest thing. Throughout my life, I had a talent to design and organize. And even as a little girl, I would go into people's houses and I would have a slumber party with a friend, and suddenly I was decorating and reorganizing their bedrooms. It was just something I could feel the energy. And so I would just change things around. And so at 39, throughout my entire life, people were saying to me, you should do this for a living. And I never wanted to do it because it was just like, I didn't see it as a talent, number one. And then number two, it still wasn't allowing me to get deeper with people and do the deeper work that I felt like I was here to do. But I went ahead and did that because I knew it was my ticket into becoming an entrepreneur. I thought, you know what? I'm going to take control of my financial destiny. I'm going to do something that means more to me and utilize my natural gift. And so I started an organizing, staging, and design business. It did really, really well.
Right.
I can't tell the story without saying, remember, I started this at rock bottom. So I had a lot of emotional clutter, the mental clutter, the spiritual clutter that I now teach in my own life. And I just needed to clear it out in order for me to get to a better place. So the company did really well, and I loved it. But what I ended up discovering was that people needed more of that deep work. And as we were shifting their physical space, it was opening up the channels for their mental clutter, their emotional clutter, and their spiritual clutter to come to the surface.
Yeah.
And then I was doing deeper work with people. And that is when I decided to make the switch, you know, 15 years in. Well, actually, 2020 helped everybody, right? It helped us all look at things a little bit more realistically. And at that point, that's when I decided to make the pivot. And I thought, you know, it's now or never. Started my coaching business very quietly. I didn't make any public announcements. Energetically, people were just coming to me. And so I was able to start working on that. And then I started writing my book. And here we are now. And I'm just thrilled that I was able to follow, you know, what my soul was really asking me to do.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a coaching for the people that need to declutter as well. Is that what I'm...
Well, I no longer work in homes. I just do one-on-one mentoring. I'm creating, you know, some group programs and things for the future. But
right.
it's really diving into that spiritual clutter, which is, you know, that loss of purpose, that sense of what am I here for? And really a disconnect from spirituality. I have found that people are very disconnected and confused, you know, spirituality versus religion. And I go into a lot of that with my clients too. So,
and what would your ideal client be?
Well, I think a lot of my clients right now are people that are dealing with that very thing that I just spoke about, right? Like spirituality, wanting to feel a little bit more connected to their own intuition.
Okay, cool.
Not really trusting themselves, doing what I used to do, that dance with what I should do versus what my soul's telling me to do. That's a big one. And then, of course, there's mental clutter. And then the emotional clutter, which is more of the unsettled grief, you know, processing past emotions, and the mental clutter, which is the constant things that are looping through our mind, the rumination. That's a big one with my clients.
How do you look at ADHD? Does it come to you often in clients, or what do you see? Because some people don't even acknowledge it as something different. And then some people just focus very differently with their clients who are neurodivergent versus neurotypical.
Well, I certainly have a different set of parameters that I use with someone that is neurodivergent. I was diagnosed with ADHD in 1978. So I was 7 years old.
Yes, I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like...
It's so unique.
It's very interesting. And I'm thinking of putting out a post. I'd like to find other, specifically women that were diagnosed in the 70s, because it's very rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I love working with my neurodivergent clients. It's incredibly rewarding to me to give them some of the insight and the tools that I use for myself.
How was that? I'm so curious about it growing up as someone labeled already, because I was not labeled and I did not think it was possible until very recently, actually, within the last 5 years, I've finally acknowledged that I'm ADHD, despite it being everywhere in my life and so obvious when I look back now. What I'm noticing a lot is that people with ADHD, there's all these posts and social media about their ADHD because they're reactive, or their ADHD because their rejection sensitivity is so high. But I really see that as not their ADHD, it's the symptom of how people treated them because they were ADHD, right? It's like a trauma response, but heightened because of the neurodivergency. So just curious, how were you as you were growing up with it?
Yes. Thank you for asking. It was really hard for me. It's, you know, I recently wrote my story and I share really some intimate details of what happened to me as a child. And listen, I've been through so much healing that it's no longer a pressure point for me. But back in the 70s, no one knew what this was. Even the professionals that were teaching me, my teachers didn't really understand it. Yeah. I display a lot like a male. I have incredible energy levels. So my hyperactivity, my impulsivity, all the things that you typically see in a boy, I was displaying those. So it was very easy to diagnose me. What ended up happening was really kind of tragic. I had teachers that disciplined me rather harshly, actually. They didn't understand, you know, what was happening. And so I was just constantly fed a negative message about myself. You are disruptive. You are too talkative. You are impulsive. You can't sit still. All the things. I had a teacher tie me to my desk with yarn because she wanted to keep me in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
She wanted to keep me in my desk because, you know, I mean,
yeah,
we had to raise our hands to get up and throw away a piece of trash. I didn't understand that. I just was doing what was natural. So, you know, it was very difficult. And I think because it was so unique.
Could you imagine if someone did that today, tied a child to it, it'd be all over.
Yeah. So I think what I ended up doing was I'm like the OG of masking. I was masking from an early age. I wanted nothing to do with that label.
Right.
I did not want a thing to do with it.
Trying to be something you weren't.
Because all I heard was the negative. I didn't hear about, you know, all the wonderful things like my psychic gifts, which were very turned on as a child. And so I started, you know, kind of quieting everything down.
Yeah. Tell me about your psychic gifts.
Oh, so that was interesting. As a child, I saw my grandfather who was deceased. I was probably about 5 or 6 when it happened. He had passed away when I was 4. And that forever branded my heart with the knowing that there's something beyond where we are right now. And I always felt his presence. It scared me a little bit later on because I'm so clairsentient that I was constantly feeling the presence of spirit. And it did scare me a little just being clairvoyant, clairsentient, and then telling people. I started to tell people, oh, I saw my grandfather, but he's not alive. And they thought that was weird. So then I shut that down too.
That's so fascinating. It's always interesting to hear how people come across their abilities or their, I don't know, psychic gifts.
When did you, or how did you bring it back out again?
Mother's house, where I had seen him. And then I was with my aunt, and I just, for some reason, I had this yearning to tell her. I had seen Sylvia Brown on TV, and I love her. My parents later bought me the book one of her books that she wrote. I told my aunt that I had seen him, and she said, oh, wow. She said, you know, I've seen him here too. And I then learned that the women in my family all have very strong intuition and psychic gifts.
Oh, yes. Yeah. What is your process for the day that you couldn't go without? So what's your kind of
non-negotiables? What can you not do a day without?
Yeah, I start every day listening to the solfeggio frequency, tapping into my spirituality, talking with my guides. I'm very spiritual. It's, you know, a huge part of my life. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I could live without having my first hour of my day for me and my guides.
Oh, me too. It's so important. I get up at like 4:30 just so I can have me time before I'm a mummy. So.
Yeah, that's what I recommend to my clients. I asked my mom how she did it, and she said, I just woke up before everyone else.
Yeah, some quiet time. With my ADHD, though, if I get interrupted, it's a little bit of a deal. But
me too.
How do you handle skeptics?
I don't worry about skeptics. I think in the past, that's what made me shut down my gifts and not, I'm here to express my gifts.
Right.
And so if I allow someone else that's confused about them to affect that, then I'm not doing my job here. Right.
Right. Right. And tell me about your book. It's just recently released, right?
Yes, it released on, I can show you a copy of it. I released it on July 3rd. Very excited.
Nice.
It's
Love Doesn't Pay the Bills.
Love Doesn't Pay the Bills. It's very surreal to have a book in the world, but I'm very, very happy about this. And
can you tell me about the title?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah, it was all divinely guided, and it was quite amazing. When my life was falling apart and I was going through a breakup, The title came to me through the boyfriend saying that to me.
Oh.
I had lost my job. He broke up with me. It was all about financial stability. And yeah, it was really interesting. And so I
dodged a bullet there.
I did dodge a bullet. I said, but I thought we were in love. And he said, love doesn't pay the bills. And I said, thanks. That's a great title for my book. And then I looked around like, who said that? But I didn't. My higher self spoke through.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I held on to that title for years, because I could not figure out what it was supposed to be about. I had always wanted to write a book, but I wanted to write something that I knew could help people.
Right.
But I just didn't see what it meant. And then it came to me again at a very weird moment where I was overtaken by this incredible spiritual awareness about what it was supposed to be about. And then I started writing.
Hmm. Okay. And what is it about?
So I love to say this. It has multiple themes throughout the book. Scarcity would be one of them.
Okay.
My scarcity mindset that, again, like I had said to you earlier, I was doing that stop and go, forging ahead toward what my soul was craving versus doing what society wanted me to do.
Right.
Fitting into the box that I never fit in.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is that, and finding my purpose and reigniting my spiritual gifts. But along the journey, of course, I had denounced my ADHD for so long.
Mm.
When I was writing the book, I didn't think that it was going to have an ADHD theme, which I think is funny. How am I supposed to write a memoir as a neurodivergent woman without that being a theme?
Right, right.
So, I mean, I allowed spirit to channel through me every day.
Okay.
Every day I asked for the messages to come through me as a conduit, not that my ego wanted to share, but something that I wanted to, you know, help people with. And so there's a strong ADHD current running through my book.
Okay.
And see, some of the battles that I had with that too, you know, sobriety was a big theme for me.
Oh, okay. And how did you enter into recovery from substance use?
Yeah, it was the same time that the breakup happened. So that was my rock bottom.
Right.
And something happened a year later that really triggered it. And I just said, you know, I've got to take control of my life. This is not what I'm meant to be doing.
Right. That voice.
And there were days where I would take a drink when I didn't want to drink. It was just my body was addicted to it. So I started learning that my body was addicted. And that's when I learned more about the dopamine and ADHD and the link there.
I do a lot of work with trauma and the connection of what we're thinking and feeling and in our bodies and how it stores in our body and releasing all that. I do a thing called brain spotting. But how do you help clients make those connections and release whatever's stuck?
Oh, good question. So I know that in my own journey, I used a couple of different healing modalities that really helped me. I agree with you. It's stored in our bodies and our nervous system, specifically in our fascia.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand what our fascia is, that electro sheath that's running all over our bodies.
Hmm.
I did Rolfing. I did 10 sessions of Rolfing, and that helped me a great deal. I unlocked just years of anger came out of me. My grief came out of me. Things moved to the surface and came out of me. And so part of what I do with people is we talk about that, the energy body, and how we need to get the emotions and the trauma out.
Right. Yeah. And feel the feelings.
So a lot of it is talk therapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of it, I always say you have to go through the emotion. You cannot go over, under, or around, because it just ends up storing and making a layer.
Yeah, you have to feel it to heal it, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Feel it to heal it. Yeah. What about, there was a lot of, I saw simplicity in love, I think it was.
Yeah, I think that when I talk about simplicity, I'm talking about eradicating all of the clutter in our lives that keeps us and holds us back from stepping into purpose, from living a life that we're meant to be living here, expressing our gifts, serving one another.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we feel true satisfaction. And money, really, we need money. There's nothing wrong with wanting money, but you cannot get there.
Right.
But you can't get there until your frequency is at a place where you can accept that abundance.
Mm.
And then the love part is all encompassing. So self-love was huge for me. I thought I loved myself, Judy. I really did. I thought I loved myself.
You didn't know yourself.
And I didn't. Yeah. I really didn't. I saw myself differently than I should have.
Mm.
I allowed external to define me.
How has your family of origin and the people around you accepted this version of you?
That's such a good question. I love that question. I ran into an old boyfriend that I dated in my early 20s. I'm 54 now, so that should tell you the time frame.
Oh.
And I had known him a little bit over the years. I would see him, what have you. But he looked at me and he goes, "You're so weird and spiritual now." I thought, I've always been spiritual, and he knew that, but maybe not to the extent that he's seeing now my social media.
Yeah.
So that was one take. Mostly people are really embracing the fact that I'm living the life that I feel
right.
I should be living. And they're really supportive. I'm blessed with a nice family that supports me.
I want to go back to the ex.
Yeah.
And that, how did you respond to that?
I said, "Well, I've always been spiritual, and to you, I've always been weird. I like the weird label. Give me the weird label. I'll carry it all day."
Yeah. I'm okay with
my weirdness now. I've always been this way. And, and then he said something about me not drinking anymore. And it was a reflection of him because he's a drinker.
Yeah. When people judge, they're coming from their own stuff.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's about where they're coming from.
Yeah. I just did a video yesterday about that because one of my clients, and she's 28, and this woman is brilliant and she's got so much talent and it's, we're working on it, but we've had two or three sessions where she brought up someone else's opinion. And so it's ingrained in her. And so we're working on breaking through that. What is that? Why is she still so concerned about what other people are seeing? It doesn't matter.
I said something the other day with a client who has some, it's a very common theme to worry about what other people think, especially if you've lived your life as a people pleaser, right? And I said, and she was very concerned about connecting with the higher self and moving into her purpose because she was worried what other people might think. And I said, that version of you isn't going to give two shits. And she was like, "I don't think I could word that as eloquently." I'm like, "I don't think that's eloquent to say the two shits. It's just the truth. You're not going to care." Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a trend right now.
Sometimes the truth is raw and it needs to be, right? I did a lot of the people pleasing thing throughout my life. I did a lot of that. And there's a chapter in my book where I had just started my business. And I don't know, you know, really what it was that this was probably the, it's still even like a couple years into my business where I knew it was working. It didn't matter. I was so concerned about what other people were thinking about me and my business.
Right.
That it was crippling me from being as successful as I could have been. And so I had to really work through a lot of things as a business owner. I think entrepreneurship really teaches you a lot about yourself.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Getting over the imposter syndrome.
That was so thick for me.
It's very common in supportive professionals to have that imposter syndrome. And yet we do help people. And I'm sure along the lines, you said you worked with youth and there was a lot of people that you probably helped. So there's kind of that direction. What would you say is your biggest challenge these days?
This is a good question. I feel like my life really flows. You know, I just feel like it flows beautifully and I don't get hung up on things where I used to get so over concerned. I don't do that. I release it. I surrender. I surrender everything to God, everything to spirit, everything to my higher self, and things typically work out.
And if something comes at you, do you like take a moment of silence or how do you kind of?
Oh, yes. Emotional regulation is something that I have had to work really hard on in my life.
It's ADHD.
Yeah, I know. And had I known that when it happened earlier, you know, we didn't know a lot about it. I was a raging teenager. It was a really hard time with me. I think that was why I was drawn to working with that population.
Yeah.
The teenage population, because I wanted so badly to help my younger self too, right?
It's so funny you say that because I have, like I said, I've been recently diagnosed and I keep thinking, God, if I had only known when I was younger, and it all makes so much sense. I would have been so much more prepared, but maybe I wouldn't have been because like you said, you had the diagnosis and still masked and still were so frustrated with it. So that kind of makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But you know, my meditation practice, my mindfulness practice,
right?
That's what saved my life. Breath work, meditation. I meditate every day. So, you know, I mean, if I didn't do that, I don't know where I'd
be. And so many with ADHD or just even neurotypical people are like, oh, I can't meditate. I can't clear my mind like that. It's not about the clearing. It's just about the being connected, really.
Yeah. And, you know, I try to explain it to my clients where, you know, we think automatically.
No.
You know, this isn't something that, you know, you can't stop your heart from beating. It beats involuntarily. And so do your thoughts. Your thoughts are going to come through. And so what I teach them is the reason why we're using our breath and we're coming back to our breath when we think of a thought, it's okay to have the thought. It's all right. Just coming back to your breath brings you back to that present moment. And then you're training your brain so that in your waking hours, in your beta brainwave state, you can pause, bring yourself back to your breath. And that does help. And if you're having a challenge, you know, that's a good way to do it. It's just to take a pause and take a breath.
Do you have any mentors or individuals that you kind of look up to? You mentioned Sylvia Brown, but are there others?
Oh my goodness. So many out there, right? I mean, I've had mentors in my personal life that I know and love and trust. And I have people that are, you know, well-known in the world, like the Eckhart Tolles of the world and the Deepak Chopras. And there's so many wonderful teachers out there. Yeah.
I'm going to see Eckhart in, he's coming to Montreal up here in October. So I'm very excited.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great.
What is one of the first things you check in with your clients? Like, do you have a process with them that you kind of do each?
I do. And then here's the thing about my process that may be a little different than traditional therapy is that I'm an intuitive. And so I need to feel their energy.
Right.
I get downloads and I channel messages. I have claircognizance and clairaudience. So it's a knowing. And sometimes I'll say something and they'll go, oh my God, how did you know that? Like they're kind of creeped out. But, you know, so my process is very much, you know, for the first session, getting to know them, letting them talk freely and picking up on the subtle cues.
Okay.
And somehow something will come through.
Yeah. Like I don't talk to my clients, my therapeutic clients about the energy process and everything, but I always feel it and very counter transference. Brain spotting is very somatic at times. And
yeah.
So they'll feel something in their body. And I notice that it happens.
Yes.
When you channel, is it like, I had someone on the other day who did like light languages, and I've talked to people on my podcast who mediumship. So is it like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's more mediumship. Yeah. It's mediumship. And it's just a clear knowing.
Okay.
Okay. You know, it's one of those things where people say, well, how do you know? It's, I just do.
Right.
You know, you can't explain it.
Yeah. It's instinct and intuition are very, very different. And intuition is like that quiet whisper kind of.
Yeah. That's it. Yes. So, I think that people are having a hard time wrapping their mind around a lot of the concepts, but
yeah.
Yeah. I think my book ends with nothing but spirituality. So, I mean, people are going to, they'll see that.
They're going to see it. Yeah.
Writing the book did release me a little bit from anything. It was like, oh, the mask is completely off now. Right. You know, so it did feel a little bit like that. Yes.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
I think I would always hide things in my life. You know, I think that people would see a package that looked very well put together.
Right.
You know, she practices yoga and she's meditating, she's doing this.
Yeah.
But they didn't know the messy stuff that got me to that place. My life was really messy, Judy. It was messy. And I'm not afraid to say it. There's a lot of personal stories in there that I'm hearing now back from people that are reading it. And what I'm hearing, it's been echoing from every voice, is I don't know that I could share the level of intimacy that you shared publicly.
There's so much power in vulnerability. But it's also beautiful because it allows you to, number one, not care if there are skeptics out there and have that empowerment of self. And number two, it gives you that acceptance of those that are like, thank you for sharing your story because that connects with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's another interesting thing too. I would write something and, you know, later I would go back and go, why did I share that? Why did I share that? And then I would have a one-on-one and a client would share almost an identical story with me. And I thought, okay, thank you, spirit. I get it. That's why I was meant to share it. So hopefully, you know, it just falls in the right hands.
I've been calling them themes. Every week there seems to be a theme that like literally all of my clients bring to me. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Some of them laugh because I've let them in. I've been like, oh, this is the theme of the week, by the way. Just so you know.
It's true. I do see common threads also. Yeah.
Coaching is just becoming a thing kind of up here in Canada. It's always been social work, therapy, psychotherapy. And I notice there's a lot of, how do I say this? A lot of stigma around becoming a coach if you're the educated therapist. Is it the same in the States still, or has it?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's we're a little bit more liberal minded that way, I think. I was really apprehensive. You know, we all have to have these identifiers in life, right? Like, what do you do for a living? And then it's, okay, am I a coach? Am I a guide? Am I a this? Am I a that?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, yeah, I think it has been accepted. Coaching's been really well received here, I think.
Yeah, I think
so. Sometimes people need a deeper layer of therapy that I can't offer.
Yeah.
You know, and I have therapists that I work with that I can then send them off to. Okay, you know, this person has some real deep trauma.
Right.
And I'm not as qualified as, you know, this person or that person. So I have a nice network where I can work with people.
Because I've noticed there's a little bit of a lot of coaches that don't have the therapeutic background are, I'm a trauma coach, but it's like, that's a little dangerous sometimes. So.
No, you can't do that. Yeah. I think too, you know, I think we're in a place where people do want to help, but we have to remember that, you know, it's not about your ego. It's not about what you want to do. It's about, you know, really tapping into your own natural gift. And if you're a coach or if you want to be a therapist, but, you know, having the credentials to help somebody with deep trauma is really important.
And it's not about the money. It's about what you want in the outcome, right? Which is to help people. And then the money comes.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I have not asked that you would like put out there?
You know, I just want to stress the importance of the fact that we are spiritual beings here having this human experience, which is beautiful. People have, you know, I have that beautiful ADHD quality of being very optimistic and positive.
Hmm.
And I don't want to shut that down anymore. I'm going to keep it up because our vibrational frequency right now specifically is the most important thing that we can all focus on. Raising your vibration, staying in a good place, but also the only way to do that is actually to face the harder things in life, feeling the pain of the grief, feeling the pain of the job loss, the breakup, whatever it is, moving through that with someone like you or me or whomever you're comfortable with, right? And getting to a place where you can maintain a vibration that is going to attract the abundance that you want into your life.
Okay, where can people find you?
So people can find me on Instagram. I just started a TikTok channel, which is kind of interesting and new for me. And of course, my website, which is simplifywithdi.net. And my book, Love Doesn't Pay the Bills, is available on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com.
Amazing. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.